Hafaday, and welcome to this edition of Heart of Harvest.
You see, faith is not so much accepting what God gives, but accepting what He withholds.
That was Pastor Marty Herron, the former pastor of Harvest Baptist Church. Heart of Harvest brings you archived sermons from Pastor Herron's nearly 19-year ministry on Guam. Our prayer for this program has always been that these messages from the Word of God would help you develop a heart for God. To download these programs or others, or to learn more about our ministry, we'd invite you to visit the Harvest Baptist Church website at hbcguam.org. That's hbcguam.org. And now, from our Harvest Archive, former Pastor Marty Herron with today's message.
God does desire to help us. How do I get through tough times? How do I look at life's injustices? How do I look at life when life's just not fair? How could it be that, God, you would allow people to go through painful, difficult parts of their life and come to the conclusion, I guess, that God really doesn't care? Or if He cared, He certainly wouldn't let these kind of things go on. Because when you read Hebrews 11, and we have gone through much of this, Hebrews 11 is the expression or examples of the exhortation, Hebrews 10, that the just will live by faith. And if the just are going to live by faith, then he begins laying out these many, many different examples we've been preaching over the last few months. And last week, we looked at those individuals that by faith were triumphant victors. These were people that had had conquest over their struggles. They escaped. And I mentioned to you these three simple truisms. That number one, that by faith, they cheerfully and confidently accepted God-given tasks against all human odds. We mentioned these people that were victors, that by faith, they courageously, they stood alone to face immense odds for Christ's sake. And I also mentioned to you that by faith, they chose obedience with God's minority rather than earth's majority. And you read through these great victors and come to the conclusion, oh, man, God's on the throne. He's answering prayer. He's doing great things. But it's very easy when you get to the place of Hebrews 11, verse 35, after women that receiving their dead raised to life again. All of those, do you not think that they were praying, God, please raise my little one? Have you ever prayed for something and it just didn't happen? Did God not answer? Did God not care? And somewhere in your Christian life, my friend, you will get to the point that unless you base your life by faith, not feelings, not fears, not comparison to other people, by faith, you will come to the point of seeing people just like the ones we're going to look at today and others in verse 35, it says. And in verse 36, beginning of it, and others. And a whole litany, a whole list of people going through great difficulties. And when I read that, I realize that by faith, some were tragic victims. And they continued in suffering. They didn't escape. They endured. And notice what he says here, because this is the first of three statements that I want to expand on. When he says, first of all, and notice they were tortured, not accepting deliverance, that they might obtain a better resurrection. A simple paraphrase that is, they refused to accept their freedom so they could be raised from death to a better life. One commentary made a statement this way, that they might be raised again to a better life, that is to say, that they might experience a resurrection better than a reprieve from death at the hand of their tormentors. They were in the place, in other words, number one of three statements I want to make you today. What I think this passage is saying is, number one, that these individuals realized they didn't sacrifice the future on the altar of the immediate. It was a faith mindset that expressed itself, that they didn't sacrifice the future on the altar of the immediate. But the writer of Hebrews moves forward with horrible events. And then he says they were destitute, they were afflicted. And when I read through all that, the writer says this because not only, number one, that they didn't sacrifice the future on the altar of the immediate, but they had a faith mindset that led them to say, number two, that the most godly Christian often will endure the most pain and unexplained tragedy. The worst thing a church can do is start making definitions about spirituality on the basis of people's difficulties and problems. You have to be in a place to realize you don't get your theology from circumstances. You get it and come to the conclusion, God, by faith, these people are living and doing right. And therefore, God, you're doing something in their life, something that I can't even see. And it motivates you, therefore, to pray for one another, not to criticize or judge. That as you read this last part of the verse in 39 and 40, and these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. God, having provided some better thing for us, that they without us should not be made perfect. What does he mean by that? Well, we would understand in verse 39, and these all having obtained a good report, they got straight A's on God's report card. In other words, the report or witness or testimony that these all were right testimonies because they all sacrificed for Christ. Now, they'll always result in reward and better conditions. That's what he means in verse 40. God having provided some better thing for us. You see, faith is not so much accepting what God gives, but accepting what he withholds. And ultimately, when you pull all this together, what the writer is saying is that the only way you and I are going to be able to step back and assimilate all of this, these circumstances, not just in those that are persecuted and martyred, but also those that go through painful experiences, that we can benefit. And the only comfort and hope you can give people is not explanations, but promises that God said, I'll never leave thee nor forsake thee. Promises that says, God, you care for me. Promises say that I have come to give you life and give it to you more abundantly. And when you turn your life over to me and you end up getting saved and giving my life in you and now the controls of your life to me, then Christ says, I will end up putting that all together. All things then will work together for good to those that are called according to purpose. I will end up allowing those events. You cannot end up restating the meanings of those without my help. Those difficulties are all focused on Christ. Because when you continue with the story in Hebrews 12, and we don't have time, but what is the whole point of Hebrews 12 too? When you hear all of this, he says, you look unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith. He's the one that has gone through more pain, more suffering, more abuse than any other human. What more despicable, humiliating position to be in than stripped naked in front of a world, abused physically on the cross, the passion, the suffering on his back, the thorns, the moral abuse of being exposed, knowing that the world is plunged into a sinful world of wickedness, and you, Christian, live in the middle of it, and taking comfort to know, Lord, I have no other encouragement to other than to know there's others who have gone through pain and suffering, many of them for the cause of Christ, but my own pain and suffering maybe didn't come through because I'm a Christian, but it came because I live in a sin-cursed world. And my father that did that, or my uncle, or some situation that as a mom and dad, you carry the burden and weight of that child and wish I could just so change that. And you come to the place of realizing that I've got to look to Jesus, the author and finisher of my faith, the creator and the completer of my faith. And that he humanly went through as abusive of a situation as anyone, and still came out on the right end. And realizing the Lord did prophesy this, all these things would happen, Matthew 24, 10. And then ultimately, my friend, you'd say, well, man, there someday be no more suffering. It won't be to the day that Christ rules on this earth and a new heaven and earth. Until then, it's going to happen. It's only going to get worse for Christians, my friend. Because you read in Revelation 6, as I was this last week, and realizing out of the fifth seal in verse 9, and when he had opened the fifth seal, I saw under the altar the souls of them that were slain for the word of the Lord and for the testimony which they held. These were individuals that were martyrs, and they cried with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth? And you find these out of Hebrews 11 and others crying out, how long is this going to go on, God? How long is it going to be till you avenge them How long are you going to till you hold them accountable for the blood that was shed? They cried with a loud voice. How long? And white robes were given unto every one of them. And it was said unto them that they should rest yet for a little season, until their fellow servants also and their brethren, that they should be killed as they were, should be fulfilled. It's going to continue. But you know that's not the end of the story, because ultimately in Revelation 19, you find all of those under the blood of the Lamb coming with him, with his army, to rule and reign. And that is the hope of heaven and the joy that someday it will be all right. It will be okay, because they realize I'm sacrificing for Christ now. It's always going to result in a little better condition. So when you get to the place and I get to the place of realizing, even as John Fox in the early 1500s, 1516, that began documenting all these painful experiences of the early church, particularly John Huss and Wycliffe. And he came to the point of quoting Tertullian that the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the gospel. And could it be for you and me that, hey, we're not martyrs and we're not going through lots of persecution, but we still got to pick up the burdens for others and pray for them. And in addition to that, embrace that our own difficulties of life today are still those ways that God are pushing us to realize that those ancient saints form our spiritual family tree. And without them, we have no roots. Without us, they have no branches. That's why he says they're made perfect or completed as that life-giving sap of their life flows through our spiritual leaves. Ultimately, the power of Christ that revealed himself in them, he wants to reveal himself in us. My meat is to do the will of him that sent me. J. Hudson Taylor made the statement, the real secret to an unsatisfied life lies too often in an unsurrendered will. Listen, martyrdom demands a few brief moments of courage. Living sacrificially calls for daily denial of life's available pleasantries for the cause of Christ. You say, Pastor, okay, how do I end up? I see this, I know this, I want to embrace these. What do I do with that? It might be that you're in a place to say, you know what, God, you have allowed us the freedom and joys of a society that is free from this bondage. But it motivates me to be able to pray for those that are in that line. It might mean that I'm going to give up some of my own available pleasantries and giving to those causes of our own missionaries that can continue on reaching out to that lost and dying world. Being in a place to say, you know, maybe it's sacrificing a little bit now so that my children realize the value and importance and joy and sweetness of sacrificing something now for something later. Being in a place to realize that it is going to be the case throughout history, and will continue to be. But that Christ said, I'll build my church. And Christian, the church is not dead. We're not presiding over his funeral. We are more than conquerors. And when you read the Bible, you read these and they look like losers. But now they're living like winners. You live for another world, my friend, and you will find great joy in the ability to say, I can't change them. I can't change that person, change that circumstance, change that situation. But I can end up allowing you to change my life, God, by having a faith mindset that expresses itself in these ways.
That was Pastor Marty Heron, the former pastor of Harvest Baptist Church on Guam. Heart of Harvest brings you archived messages from Pastor Heron's nearly 19-year ministry at the church. You can download sermons from this archive at hbcguam.org/HOH for Heart of Harvest. All the information you need to send us a comment or question can also be found at hbcguam.org/HOH. Today's teaching from the Word of God was intended to help you develop a heart for God. Join us again next time, and thanks for listening to Heart of Harvest.